This is Tiffany Liao, coming on pages 238 to 241 from Special Topics in Calamity Physics by Marcia Pessel. I chose this passage in which Blue has an exchange with Food Mart night shift cook Larson for a number of reasons. First of all, the image of a hardy boy lookalike named Larson spouting at King Lear is pretty fun, but it also underscores how Blue and our quick labeling of individuals may not hold true upon closer inspection. More importantly, however, this passage really stood out to me because of its effect on my analysis of Blue as an active narrator. In several interviews, Pessel describes Blue with a scientific mind. She loves order, classification, responsible, and unambiguous labeling, and Blue filters every life experience she has through books. To me, not only does Blue interpret life events through books, through her endless citations and apt allusions to Socrates, but she also sees her own life as a novel and writes it as such, with a proper dramatic structure that Larson helpfully delineates for her in this passage. In the exchange, Larson's explanation of the elements of a compelling story alludes to the elements around which Blue will construct her life story a year later. Blue certainly experiences what Larson calls heartbreak and betrayal of Milton, and then her father, and we see how getting banged up, as Larson puts it, helps her create a convincing through line. In fact, it's Blue's interactions with Heidi and her father's abandonment that compel us to read her story. Within the structure of her life story, neatly organized in the core curriculum, this passage also hints at how Blue will create her story, the rise in the action, the climax, the denouement, and the twist ending, even perhaps her own character arc, from point A to point G, from precocious Jane Goodall-like observer to tragic crime-fighting heroine with an admirable devotion to justice, a character that can play a lead for five whole acts. Tellingly, Larson asks Blue to determine what their dialogue is. Gotta tell us if we're in a comedy or a melodrama or who did it or what they call a theater of the absurd. This highlights that Blue is the active author of this work and that she really is giving these characters dialogue. It's truly up to her how the events of these novels are going to be read, as farcical or dramatic or unbearably tragic. It's a turning point in the novel when Blue decides finally how she's going to frame her life story as a whodunit. In fact, it's only after realizing this that she suddenly knows where I wanted to go, whom I had to talk to, as plain as the mirrored windows, and goes to speak to Hannah. Larson's request that she determine the genre they are in is a crucial moment for Blue as she drafts her life story. Genres are the frame by which we classify a work and how we are going to read it, based on our expectations of the work. Once Blue makes up her mind that the story is a whodunit, she begins to structure the story to follow our expectations of a murder mystery. Events of the novel begin to accelerate. This is when Hannah decides to impart her own story to Blue, albeit in bits and pieces projected onto other members of the Blue Bloods. True to genre, Blue, the amateur detective, puzzles together the clues and ties up loose ends in a shocking revelation in the final pages of the novel. No mysterious clue, not even a Walmart-purchased Shifty Bush invisible gear, is ignored. Why does Blue choose to frame her life story as a whodunit in place of a tragedy or a comedy? And what does this genre offer that others do not? This whole passage serves as a reminder that we are reading these events as filtered through Blue as she tries to make sense of Hannah Schneider's murder a year after the event. Since Blue loves order, classification, and labeling to the point of what I believe is oversimplification, I'm wary of whether Blue gives into these scientific tendencies when faced with the chaos and mystery of Hannah's death and her father's abandonment. I wonder if any of you see any moments where she might organize or label things in order to create a more cohesive narrative. Is she leaving anything out, or is she forcing connections? Is Blue altering the narrative consciously, if she is at all? And Larson's conversation with Blue also serves to eerily foreshadow several upcoming moments in the story. He mentions his own father's abandonment and also references King Lear, a play that comments on the dynamics and relationship between parents and children. Perhaps his presence is also a literary convention that Blue employs, another clue she drops to the readers as she classifies and orders her story. This is also a good point to examine Blue's use of citations. These citations are meant to support Blue's story and to reinforce them with images and thoughts culled from other authors we consider more authoritative. Like a well-researched paper, Blue's story takes on the ring of truth when it's padded with these annotations. Yet I find that these citations have the opposite effect for me. Blue's constant interruption of the narrative flow within these citations makes it so that we as readers are unable to fully immerse ourselves in the text. Instead, I become constantly aware of active authoring of the novel. I also read it as a sign of Blue's insecurity. Perhaps her obsessive citation is meant to disguise the convoluted resolution of the novel. Added to this fact that many of these citations are false, such as the novel The Puppets That Change Our Lives references this passage, and Blue seems so determined to properly bolster a story that when she runs out of books to cite, she simply invents new ones. I'm left with the nagging sensation that this work is simply Blue's working thesis and is hardly to be taken as fact. This also raises the question of why do citations, which are only another opinion, offer so much authority, especially when compared to our own opinions? And do we actually read citations for what they mean, or simply, perhaps in a Blue-like way, use them as needed to support what we want to say? Expanding on that, PESL seems to challenge us to move this distrust of citations to the to a distrust of our narrator, Blue. Her version of events is also just an opinion, so isn't it as easily refutable as any other opinion? And are there other versions of the truth that we can get from the text? Could we image a different telling of the story? And what might this say about the subjectivity of truth if Blue's truth, well cited and researched as any authoritative text, can be found lacking? I'd be interested in what you have to say about this during class discussion, and I look forward to seeing you tomorrow.